It's a Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Silver State Radio. Now you were coming by 503-733-2970, yes?
But I found it humorous that when you played that Bungle in the Jungle, the roar of the lion kind of scared poor Buzzy.
Well, to be honest, I mean, every time I hear the announcer saying, and now Jethro Tull, but I'm gone. I mean, I don't think in my entire life I've ever listened to a Jethro Tull song all the way through. Because to me, it's like when they say the emergency broadcasting test or whatever, it's just like a test of this is a test to determine if your local state, Jethro Tull songs are a test of my reflexes and how fast I can reach up to the radio and yank it away to another station. So, I don't really know that I would have been adequately prepared for that either. But then again, I never really had to work. I never worked in a straight classic rock format either. So I was spared having to play Bungle in the Jungle. I take it you were not spared.
No, I've played that on numerous occasions.
Hundreds of times.
Oh, do you have is that Scotty's phone? I was going to inquire if this was the one taken out of the commode.
No, Scotty, what is your? Would you please type on the screen your phone number? It's 503, right? Okay, and you pop that down, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that a picture of Cadence on here?
Okay, we're good. All right, you just got to hear his greeting. It's the perky... Okay. All right, that's pretty cool.
How do I send it?
He's got the perkiest greeting you've ever heard.
He does.
Reach Scotty J. Please leave a message and I'll be sure to return your call just as soon as possible. Have a great day.
Is that serious?
Please record your message.
It really is true.
Yes, Scotty, I would like to know if you teach line dancing.
You can just hear the big dopey white smile on his face as he says it. Ladies and gentlemen, make way for Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Searchers looking for those three missing climbers on Mount Hood are staying out of sight today. They're hindered by a storm with winds expected to gust 100 miles an hour. Things that high, they could find their way back to Texas. So, that's that for today. Meanwhile, the president has completed a whirlwind so-called listening tour on how to proceed in Iraq. After the meetings at the Pentagon, the president said the U.S. must continue to help the young Iraqi government. That's three little desks inside a bunker that nobody listens to. Confront and defeat the enemies of a free Iraq.
There have been a lot of violence in Iraq.
Okay. Normally, he takes like 8 or 9 seconds to get to the dumb con. There have been a lot of violence in Iraq.
There have been a lot of violence in Iraq.
Oh, God almighty.
The violence has been horrific. Scores of innocent men, women, and children are being brutally killed by ruthless murderers.
Let's stay as long as possible, huh? What if you
were... They respect us and wish to be more like us every day.
Being greeted with daisies put in the barrels of our rifles. What if you were staying at a hotel and it's just every morning when you walked through to get your croissants in the newspaper, there was just a man being beaten in the face with brass knuckles and you had to step over his steaming pool of blood to get to your morning coffee?
I would call a room service.
Yes. And then you would say, check, please. I am going to the Ramada Inn. Yeah, that's not what we do. We apparently...
There have been a lot of violence in Iraq. Violence has been horrific. Scores of innocent men, women, and children are being brutally killed by ruthless murderers.
So let's set up a permanent base and spend as much time as possible.
I'm sure we'll be accepted in due time.
Of course.
Yes, this is called the new way forward in Iraq. The president said he had good discussions with Pentagon officials.
We spent a lot of time talking about a new way forward in Iraq to help the Iraqi government confront and defeat the enemies of a free Iraq.
Okay. That's people sitting at three desks inside a bunker.
Here's the thing.
We are trying to help them. This is a free Iraq. A young Iraq government.
Free Iraq is like that free couch. This is free hat.
He's sitting on the Southeast part.
Who wants free Iraq? No, pass, thanks. I'll wait for free. For the free Syria later on. Lisa Goddard, who was she's no one's idea of a fool. She's clearly a very learned and savvy woman. But you know what? Yeah. Even she had not noticed the creation of the way forward catchphrase. Is it just us? Are we Is it not just transparently obvious to everybody when he says, look, when they shift off of mission accomplished or new direction or whatever, is it really, are we the only ones who notice how blatant it is that they shift gears into way forward? I mean, it must just be us.
Right. Any consultant will tell you it's forward motion. Yeah. You don't keep back, Sully, especially if it's unpleasant, which this has been.
Just move. Don't look at that.
You've just heard 10 murders, 3 bombings, several maimings.
I guess.
And coming up next, the new way forward.
I guess that is true. I guess it's a whole lot of... I guess they really don't do that on the... You know, they don't let some kooky music station to come out. You've just heard 6 minutes of spots. I guess they don't. You just listen to 5.5 minutes of commercials. Ah, yeah. We'll do it again later. I guess they don't do that. It's really a whole lot of... Coming up, we got more from George Strait and Pharrell Williams. I mean, that's... I guess that's it, man.
That's
so,
it.
All right.
The president has a word, just one word, apparently, for the troops in Iraq.
Sorry.
And I want them to know that I am focused on developing a strategy that will help them achieve their mission.
What is the mission?
Really, imagine how little comfort that must give you. What must it be like to be sitting over there, and you're sitting in some godforsaken, sand-filled foxhole. Your feet are being attacked by wolverines, or whatever it is they have over there. People are shooting at you. You run the risk of being blown into little pieces every time you decide to cross the street to get yourself a hunk of goat for lunch.
I mean, they're trapped there. Basically, you don't journey outside.
Yeah, there's nowhere you can go. It's 115 degrees at 4 o'clock in the morning in December. And you turn on the radio, our glorious leader will have new... What news from the homeland, sir? What has our glorious leader given us and our commander?
And I want them to know...
Oh, here it comes.
...that I am focused on developing a strategy that will help them achieve their mission.
Well, okay.
Did they believe that still?
No. No. It's right back into the sinkhole. Fantastic. All right.
Well, let's talk about the holiday allergies that make the season merry and bright, shall we?
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Dr. David Lang, an allergy expert at the Cleveland Clinic. We always go to them late in the afternoon because every other place is closed.
I love the Cleveland Clinic.
I know. It's that time of the afternoon. Everyone else has gone home. No, the Cleveland Clinic is still open.
Hold on. I'm going to create right now, because as I said in my head, it's spelled Cleveland and Clinic with a K. Mm-hmm. I am going to create a sounder. The Cleveland
Clear
Clinic.
Clear copper clappers.
I don't even know what that means. What has clear copper clappers?
The Cleveland Clinic.
But I mean, before this moment, 5 seconds ago, what had clear copper clappers?
Well, this was a clean clinical.
Stop it, you're killing me. I cannot concentrate because of this cornucopia of comedy.
This is awful corny.
You can't continue because it is... No, I got nothing. I'm done. All right. Where are we going?
Well, one of the biggest problems this time of the year for many allergy sufferers is holiday food with ingredients like nuts and raw eggs, as we all have.
And this is news from where?
The Cleveland Clinic.
There you go. That's the official Cleveland Clinic sound from now on.
We are a morning show.
Sort of. I'm sorry.
Don't even wish for such a thing.
Am I supposed to be playing the...
Yeah, you are. Number 4.
Oh.
From the Cleveland Clinic.
A variety of foods that are consumed around the holidays, including cookies and candies
and
or eggnog, may contain allergens to which people are allergic and people will have reactions. The nuts and peanuts are a particular issue because sometimes those can be hidden. In a variety of desserts,
my nuts.
Cakes, or cookies.
Don't hide your nuts in this cake.
So that's the latest on cookies from the Cleveland Clinic.
keep those nuts away from my wife. She's terribly allergic.
Well, let's go back to our discussion earlier of the lingerie handbook.
Who says the nuts? Uh-oh. Who says the nuts and peanuts are the
That's
allergic
okay. We're
thing?
We're moving soon.
I'm sorry. I spilled a cup of coffee, but it doesn't really matter. It was empty. I'm sorry, Sarah, what?
So how come they had to clarify, well, the nuts in peanuts make you sick?
Well, as opposed to the pea
and the peanuts.
Yeah,
the pea and
the peanuts. If you take the nuts out of peanuts, then you'd be set.
But you're chewing on the shell, it's okay.
We're putting the pea back in peanuts.
Yes. Well, you know how the Cleveland Clinic is.
Oh, damn it. I'm sorry.
Now, getting back to our earlier discussion in our ladies segment of the lingerie handbook with author Rebecca Aspen.
Jesus Christ, okay.
Now, we already discussed visible panty lines, how to be measured properly for a bra that fits, and correct undergarments. Now we're going to talk about undergarments that make all the difference for a Christmas outfit.
The right underwear, the right size bra, and it makes your outerwear look great. All the movie stars know that. I mean, before they go on the red carpet to receive the Academy Awards, they call up and get those strapless bras or get the Spanx that hold them.
The Spanx?
Spanx. This woman is a genius who made those, yeah.
Spanx. Pardon me, I've got Spanx, doctor. Can you tell me?
No, Spanx, it's this woman.
They're not like pasties, are they?
No, not like pasties. This woman who would cut the feet off of her nylons and wear them underneath pants so that you can't see, like if your pants are really tight, it kind of smooths out everything so you can't see, like, panty lines and whatnot. And this woman marketed them, and now she's a billionaire, like, a year later.
I don't understand. They're
footless nylons that you can wear, like, under pants or...
But why do you want to do that? Do you have, like, wrinkly leg skin or something?
No, to kind of smooth the appearance out, because sometimes, like, slacks are really tight, and they kind of hang.
So your Spanx are for your slacks?
Yes.
There's a joke there somewhere.
Sometimes I forget I'm talking to a 12-year-old.
No, it's funny. Spanx is a funny word.
It is.
It is.
And you can tell by the way...
And it's a young girl who created these, too, and now she sells them in every Nordstrom in the world, and she's doing good.
No, it's like that... And those are the... You know, that guy who invented the pet rock made $1 million. It's got different conclusions you can jump to. Here's the thing about this woman. You can tell by listening to her that she doesn't know any movie stars, has never met a movie star, probably only stalks movie stars as they whiz by in a cab on their way to somewhere more exciting, but likes to position herself as someone who knows movie stars.
The right underwear, the right size bra, and it makes your outerwear look great.
Your exoskeleton.
All the movie stars know that. I mean, before they go on the red carpet to receive the Academy Awards, they call up and get those strapless bras or get the Spanx that hold them.
That's totally a thing of, like, you want to look like a movie star, don't you, gullible American?
And who says movie star? And you don't get your award on the red carpet. I know I'm being a nitpicker, but phrasing is just really
because
obnoxious.
She has no idea what she's talking about. It doesn't matter, though, because she has a great voice.
Please say you have more, Tim.
No, is that the end of the Cleveland Clinic?
I'm afraid so. All of that, yes.
All right.
Does anyone actually want to give someone the World Trade Center on DVD for Christmas?
I don't understand. You mean the movie?
It's on sale now.
Like as a little holiday pick-me-up?
Yeah. Apparently so. It's being advertised as such.
No, that doesn't really seem like a thing that's an appropriate Christmas gift. Did I tell you that I'm going to do the same thing this year, though? I'm going to tell everybody that I adopted a small child in their name in a country that they can't verify. That's the thing I figured out, where you just go, no, look, I'm not going to be giving you a...
Do you make up, like, fake paperwork?
Yeah, because all you have to do is just print out a thing,
fake
card.
You're not actually helping anybody, and you're not buying presents, so you're just a cheap bastard all around.
I am Zimbabwean daughter, Clorox.
Exactly, but you say, like, Malawi now, because that's where all the cool kids are getting their kids from.
Yes. You wouldn't say that it's related to one of Angelina Jolie's kids?
She said, look, now, there are many Malawi children.
They're from the same village.
They need our help, and I have given $45 to a little Haji in your name. And then you look like a good person, and they can't get in your face about no gift, because then they're taking food out of the mouths of a child.
You don't want to see another bloated belly, do you?
I'm hiring someone to swat the flies away for a day.
You better really send money, Rick.
Would it get there?
They're fly fan. Yeah, because it's a Kinnison thing. It's an old Kinnison routine. Oh, now I feel like it's been taken out of context.
Now you really should buy Malawi children.
Adopt a child.
Rick, you are a size 31 in the same universe when I'm an Amazon with double D breasts. Get over it, fat boy. I am.
Come out here.
Is this the thing where you have to look at my ass?
Didn't we just weigh you like a couple days ago and you were pushing 200?
First of all, I wasn't pushing 200. I was 84. That's only according to this scale, which is never... Let's see what I weigh now.
We don't know if that scale is correct.
It's not correct. That's exactly my point. Hold on.
Let me stand on this. I know how much I weigh.
Is it, Jim?
133.
That is a lie. You do not weigh... Really?
Yeah.
133 pounds?
How much do you think I weigh?
Well, I guess more than that. I mean, not that you look overweight.
Mm-hmm.
That really does make me feel fat.
It's not ending.
Scotty, what the hell is up with your... Now it's just... I've broken the scale. Now it's not even working.
You need an old-fashioned scale.
It lit up...
You should get off the scale and get back on. Okay.
The scale's just begging for mercy.
It was one. The scale said I weighed 183.6. So.
I guess it is wrong.
Something to share with the group?
It says 581.
It doesn't say.
Well, I'm looking at it upside down.
Is that 185.6?
It's 185. So theoretically, I have gained 2 pounds in a week, but that doesn't seem.
Well, it's a holiday season.
Well, it is a time of
year. Yeah.
Well, I know my fake weight from the other day. Remember when it didn't read my real weight?
You'll note that I'm a gentleman and I'm not revealing it.
I know,
even
because...
though it's fake, so you say, I am not... Okay, now is this... I don't know these pants. Do these pants have the measurement on the outside?
I don't know.
All right. My ones that I wore yesterday, because these aren't Levi's, I don't think. These are...
I can't tell.
That
no, it's just the... No, it's just the
nope.
date.
Okay.
You aren't a 31.
I am a 31. I am. That's what I when I go to the store.
Okay, if Tim weighs 133 pounds and you weigh 185, I highly doubt you wear the same size pants.
I'm just taller than Tim.
You're not very much taller than him.
I am. Okay, look, I'm.
You're like 4 inches taller than him, maybe.
Okay, but that's what. But that's all I'm.
It's all muscle.
What? It's all news.
You're
muscle.
You're getting so flustered.
It's all newsman muscle. I have highly developed news muscles, Sarah, that are not like your earth muscles. These muscles help me process the
well,
news
maybe
and
we
extrude
should...
it in an
Let's
in
have
an easily
Tim weigh himself
fashion.
If he knows he wears one, weighs 133 and see if it's off.
All right.
Okay.
Ow! Oh, I just whacked my teeth into the microphone. Ow.
It's not your day.
Oh, it's the best show ever.
So you just step on this like a normal person?
Yep.
Yeah, and then it breaks and it stops working for a while and then you have to get off and then Sarah has to like...
Oh!
139, it says here.
So, but that's wrong.
So it's like
wrong.
6 pounds off. You're only 180.
And by the way, it actually is 139.8, so it's 140. So it is 7 pounds off.
Yeah.
So my
I did have lunch.
So
I did have a salad and a piece of cake for lunch.
He did have a piece of cake.
Glutton.
But it is the holiday season.
Positively gloop-like. So subtract 7 pounds off whatever I just was. So I'm actually 179 in your face, sir.
Well, that's reasonable.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Yeah.
That changes the whole second number on your
But weight. I could have put on a couple pounds with that cake and that salad, and I had some vegetable soup.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
And I am wearing these heavier boots.
And it's not inconceivable. In fact, it's not. I don't even know why I'm defending this. The number says 31. My pants say 31. I am a 30. You know, and here's why this pisses me off.
You're one of those
off.
Guys that goes into the store and snips off a lower size pants, and then you like sew it onto the back of your pants to make yourself seem small. Like
no
Jerry Seinfeld.
That. No one does
like
that.
Like Seinfeld.
Yes,
that's how you do that with his Levi's.
Just cut sections of my stomach away before I go to the store.
You're kind of OCD like
that. Here's why this makes me angry. This is why this is sticking in my craw, as they say. Because when I was shopping, I think it was for Bigger Than Jesus garb, this is the thing where Joni was all up in my face about how I couldn't possibly be, I think it was either a 30 or a 31 that I was wearing at that point.
Are you sure it wasn't a 29 or 28?
You know, I'm just saying. And but she was all, you are not a 31. Because I... And I'm not going to say what her waist size is. That would be inappropriate. But I'm simply saying, and I know that
she's
not...
very lean.
I know not that she's a slender woman, and I'm not going to cross that line, but I'm saying, she said that, well, that's blah, blah, blah from what my waist is, and I know that's wrong. Because Joni's, you know, she's a petite girl. And, you know, and she, her waist is blank. And she's like, you are not a 31, because I'm blank, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, I know you're not that close to my waist. She was all, like, doing the head snap and, like waving her fingers at me and everything. And so I had to defend it to her that I was a 31, and I can't believe I'm defending it now. And I've spent... Oh, what? What? Sid, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yeah, Rick, I'm 6'3". I weigh 187. People describe me as skinny, and I have a 34-inch waist. So unless your head weighs 50 pounds...
It does. It's full of knowledge. My head is full of show prep and black stuff.
What's your inseam?
My what now?
The length of the
30,
leg.
32.
That's it. Sarah, let me explain something.
I wear a 31-32.
A big trauma for a man is when he becomes a square. In other words, when his waist size equals his inseam, it's
Daddy-o.
Very dramatic. And he's in denial of becoming a square.
Oh, that's so sad. So I should stop picking on him.
I'm to remain a Hepcat for as long as possible. I am a 31.
Yes.
Sons of bitches. I'm a 31, 32.
A perfect square.
I am not a square. I have been... I can't believe we're having this discussion.
You're as wide as you are long.
I have been a 30, 32 or a 31, 32 for most of the last X years. Last whatever, since I achieved manhood. So, Look, if I'm not a 31, I couldn't wear these pants. I just wouldn't be able to wear them.
You don't know what size pants they are.
They're a 31!
You, I haven't seen you look. You showed me a tag that had nothing on it. I'm just supposed to
do
believe they're 31?
Do I have to take
31?
My pants off? I'll
no,
do it.
No,
I'll
no.
do it.
Go in your special bathroom and do that. You don't need
special
to do
place.
It in here.
Now, I cannot vouch for these pants, but the jeans I wore yesterday, because they are the Levi's that have the ass tag right on the back, which you think they would have gotten rid of by now, because why would you want that there? Hello, look at my waist. It's huge. They say 31, 32, and I'm willing to bet that these are the same. All right.
Well, good luck, Rick.
Yeah, okay, thanks. Thanks.
Should we break so we can come back for a couple minutes before you have that?
Let's break. We'll come back with Tim Riley.
Talking.
Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth, and then we will talk to Tracy Guns from L.A. Guns. You guys are dicks. 503-733-2970.
So, I mean...
I'm not a square!
But all, you know, aside,
choose
you still have
words.
Gained 2 pounds from
choose
last
your
week,
words.
Right?
Wait, but it's December.
Yeah.
It's Christmas. It's the time of miracles.
It's not Christmas. It's the 13th.
It's Christmassy. It's like truthiness. It's Christmasness. It's Hanukkah. That thing. 8 days of eating. And then they ride a reindeer somewhere. And then they do a thing. Then they spin chocolate or something. Whatever. Hey, we'll be back after this. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. You stay right there. Emerson radio program. 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming along. You want to throw it over here to me for a second, Sarah? I'll just with the Scotty prepared this for us. Coming up here in just a few minutes, we'll touch Tracy Guns from LA Guns. Gonna be in town tomorrow along with the Bullet Boys. And Appetite for Deception, who are kind of the Northwest premier Guns N' Roses tribute band. 503-733-2970. That's tomorrow on Outlaws. Let's quickly get this call. And then we'll talk to Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth. Jeanette.
Hello?
Jeanette, hello.
Hey.
Hey.
I wanted to weigh in on your pants size.
You wanted to what?
Weigh in on your pants size.
So to speak. Ah, yes, okay.
How tall are you?
This itself was a matter of some debate a while back.
Rick's like 5'10".
I'm not 5'10", I am 6 feet tall, ever so slightly over.
Okay, and you're what, about 180?
It's such an embarrassing lie.
It's not a lie.
It is so... He's like 5'10". Okay, I'll give you 5'11". I'll give you 5'11". Let's see your license. Let's see your driver's license.
Oh, hold on.
They don't list it on driver's licenses anymore.
Don't they?
Nope, not the new ones.
Why not? Tim just got his new license today, actually, and it's got two pictures of him. It's very
strange. That's how my sister's fake ID got confiscated, because my height didn't match her.
I don't know anything about it. No, here's the thing. There was a time in the past when I thought I was 6'1", because I was told that by, you know, when I went to my checkup or whatever, and he's like, you're 6'1". Just look, that thing against the wall that your grandmother notches. I thought I was 6'1". It turns out I am 6 feet tall.
Okay, so you're about 180, 385.
Roll your eyes at me. Tall? Yes.
Okay, I am 5'8 and 170, and I wear Levi's 550s, 32-32s. I completely agree that you could be legitimately be a 31-32.
If only you worked on this radio program, Jeanette. And so I'm just saying. So there you go. So Jeanette is on my side.
Jeanette, at least
someone
is.
See, that's what I'm saying. See, I am not saying that I'm the perfect picture of health and nutrition.
I'm not saying that you're 6 feet tall.
You're probably a darn sight better than I am, hon.
Now, Jeanette, don't get down on oneself. Positive self-image comes from within.
Absolutely. All well, right. Anyway, I just wanted to weigh in on that, so have a good day.
Thank you, Jeanette. All right, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, let's pay a visit to Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
The Girls Gone Wild video empire agreed to pay $1.6 million, and its founder was sentenced to community service today for filming drunken underage gals in raunchy videos.
Yeah.
Apparently, the company used two 17-year-olds on its DVDs and videos.
Oh, bad,
which feature young ladies bearing their breasts in public.
That's wrong. I didn't hear
this. This happened during the Panama City Beach spring break of 2003.
Woo. I mean, no.
Judge Smoke told Mr. Francis that he had a community service because it didn't appear that a fine would be a meaningful punishment. So this $1.6 million fine is only about 12% of the company's 2005 profits. And let's see. The judge says it doesn't take a very brave man to go out and corner a girl in the middle of spring break or hand four drinks.
Scotty's typing on the screen. It's BS. They wanted it.
Well, Francis said the girls lied about their ages. And let's see here. He has to do community service for 30 months. But somebody did go to prison, and not for underage girls. Former Enron CEO Jeffrey Skilling has reported to prison. The Houston Chronicle reports Skilling arrived at the prison in Minnesota just after noontime today. Skilling's brother Mark reportedly drove him there. Skilling's wife Rebecca was in the back seat. A U.S. appeals court ruled Monday that Skilling could remain out of prison while they considered the bail request, but changed their mind. Go to jail. Go directly to jail.
Up your nose with a rubber hose.
Enjoy yourself.
I think you ought to have to do Ken Lay's time, too. Let's do a couple more here.
Although Lindsay Lohan's enrollment in Alcoholics Anonymous is news to many, she let people in on the little secret. She's been going to meetings for a year. The 20-year-old actress, whose progress has been shaky at best, despite not being legally allowed to drink at the Fancy Pants nightclub she frequents in California, has learned that kicking an addiction is not something that can be forced. She proudly announced she's gone a full 7 days without drinking, saying, I feel better not drinking.
I've got... never mind.
I have Red Bull now.
Okay, whatever.
She's ready to retire her reputation at 20 that she's earned in this year.
The best part about this story, and I don't know if it's in here or not, the best part about this story is how, in a space of two sentences, she says that she's drinking because she works all the time. Mm. And then like a sentence later, she goes, I have too much free time.
But see, I work every single day. Every day? That's weird, because she also blamed her partying on having too much free time on her hands.
Yeah.
I was off from work, she explains, in a recent rash of troubling run-ins. I was getting ready to start a film, and I was going out just to get it out of my system. So,
My favorite was her drunken email that she sent out to everyone about Al Gore.
Robert Altman! Oh, no, that and the Robert Altman one. And it was sort of like the George Bushian syntax. Robert Altman, have many good, have done film.
Well,
I love.
Well, but that one, she was close to him, so that's kind of different.
Rupert put cork on fork.
But the one where she said she has influence over everyone in the world and Al Gore's her best friend.
I am Lindsay Lohan.
Kneel before me.
There were much violence in Iraq.
Exactly.
Oh, that was pretty close.
We look good, new forward way.
He doesn't drink. The president doesn't drink.
No, of course, no, not anymore.
No,
he is an alcoholic.
Many, many
though,
years.
As he himself would say, he is an alcoholic. And his wife killed somebody. It's 503, and that's a fact. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. I'm going to tell you right now, I went to, this would be, I think, 91, 92, something like that. And you want to talk about an experience I had where my head rang for like 5 days afterward. And it was the Hollywood Vampires Tour that L.A. Guns did. And I saw L.A. Guns in Seattle. And it was one of those shows where you walk out and it's been so loud. There's a phrase that I think Lemmy Kilmister from Motorhead said once. If they can't hear the music, let them feel the music. And I walked out feeling like my rib cage had just been collapsed. We want to welcome to the Rick Emerson Show from L.A. Guns, appearing at Outlaws tomorrow night along with Bullet Boys and Appetite for Deception. Let's welcome to the Rick Emerson Show from L.A. Guns, Tracy Guns. Hello, sir.
Hey, guys. What's happening?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Good, good, good. I'm running around Olympia, Washington.
Olympia, Washington's a fantastic place.
It is. It's raining. Surprise.
No, it's the coffee is strong and the women are loose, sir. I encourage you to pursue life to the fullest while in Olympia.
You know, I found that out last night. Very bizarre. Very bizarre that when people actually say something, it's true every so often.
So I got to tell you, I was talking to a friend of mine last night, and we were talking about it. I said, hey, I'm going to have Tracy Guns on the show tomorrow. And we started talking about it. And just, you are sort of the, let me channel Dennis Miller here for a second. You are the Tigris and Euphrates in so many ways of kind of what I call just that great, sleazy, L.A. Rock. I mean, you run down a list of the bands that you have wandered through their history, started, been part of, founded,
right,
worked with. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And, you know, you're one of the last guys standing.
Yeah, I mean, it's
from that era.
Weird. And I think that was the intention, you know. I was like, okay, you know, maybe I ain't that great, but I'm going to last and I'm going to play really loud.
Let me,
you know, people dig it, and now I can actually play. So
let me ask you this. I was talking to my producer, Sarah, about this, and she's like, are you nervous? What are you going to ask him? What are your questions going to be? And the one question, and it's a big question that I don't even really know if you can sum it up, but describe what it was like, the vibe in the air on the Sunset Strip in, you know, 86, 87, when everything is just big and bold and gaudy and loud. What was it like? What was the vibe in the air at that time?
It was scary. I mean, you know, really, to be honest, because, you know, when I started doing this, I was about 16, 17 years old, you know, and kind of the Motley Crue era, you know, they had kind of gone and passed, and Quiet Riot, all those bands were already on the radio with big records out and stuff like that by the time, you know, L.A. Guns and Guns N' Roses really started, you know, hammering it hard. And I was really young, you know, so I was sneaking into the Rainbow, I was sneaking into the Whiskey, I was doing all that stuff. And at that time, you know, when I was that young, I was just kind of picking up table scraps, you know. It's like, oh, there's a drunk chick over there, I know she'll bang me. You know what I mean? It was kind of like that. And, you know, luckily for me, you know, all kidding aside, you know, I've been playing guitar since I was 6 years old, and I had kind of already, you know, cut my teeth on, you know, becoming, you know, a pretty good musician. So I kind of had to weasel my way through it, you know, sleep in, at ugly girls' houses, you know, because they made food and they took care of stuff, and they were so nice and so grateful, and I think that's what everybody was going through, you know. I mean, there weren't a lot of us that had solid jobs, you know.
Right.
And our parents, you know, none of our parents were very supportive of us just being, you know, basically bums, you know. So, you know, on the Strip, you know, who's going to own the Strip next? And we did, you know, eventually we did. And when you got to that kind of status there, it was, you were out of there pretty quick. You know, by the time, you know, we were really, you know, selling everything out and, you know, just, you know, calling places we were staying ours and people coming to these, you know, girls' apartments, you know,
when
weeks on end, you know, then we were signed and we were out of there.
When you were growing up, I mean, when did you know you're like, I got to be a rock star. That's my thing. That's what I'm going to try to do.
Well, there was two things. You know, when I was seven, I heard A Whole Lot of Love for the first time. And I asked my mom, and I go, what is that sound, you know? And she said, oh, that's Jimmy Page, that's Led Zeppelin. And I knew right then, you know. I was like, oh, my God, you know, I have to make that sound, you know. And then I moved to France later that year with my mom, and before we left, there was a picture of Jimmy Page on the cover of Cream magazine, and she showed me what he looked like. And I was like, oh, my God, well, you know, that guy looks like a wizard or something, you know. And that was it. I was just so intrigued by the image and the darkness and the noise. You know, the noise scared me, you know. And, you know, any shrink will tell you, you know, if you want to, you know, do something, you know, walk right into the fear, you know, and do it. And that was it. You know, I just wanted to be able to touch one person like Jimmy Page touched me. That was the whole basis.
We're talking to Tracy Guns from LA Guns. Are going to be Outlaws tomorrow. Did you, in that whole time, well, let me back up and ask you one question.
Okay.
Is Decline of Western Civilization 2 by Penelope Spheeris, is that an accurate representation of that era?
No, it's not. What that is, you know, not to put anybody down or say anything, but, you know, most of the bands that were in that thing were kind of, you know, the leftovers, you know, after everything had passed. You know what I mean? There wasn't a lot of solid stuff. I mean, Gazzari's, you know, a lot of it centered around Gazzari's, and that was part of some type of scene, but it wasn't really, you know, part of the scene that, you know, spawned bands like Jet Boy and you know, L.A. Guns and Poison and Guns N' Roses and stuff like that, you know, because you know that none of those bands are really in that movie.
Right, right.
Yeah, so when you really look at that, that was really a lot of table scraps happening there, and there was enough there to make a movie out of it.
What is the, and this is a thing that my friends and I talked about last night, and everybody kind of had a different version of this in their heads. What is the lineage of L.A. Guns, Hollywood Rose, Guns N' Roses? I mean, how did it come together? Who started what? What's the timeline?
That's easy. Okay. So, like, you know, around 1983, I started L.A. Guns, you know, my last year of high school, like 11th grade. And it was with some guys that, you know, I went to school with. And I ended up meeting Izzy at the Roosevelt Hotel. He was playing in a band called Shire, mm-hmm. which was like a Scorpions-type, you know, heavy metal band. And he was playing bass. And we became real good friends real quick. And he moved into, you know, my mom's house. You know, we became roommates. And he brought Axel out from Indiana, and they started Hollywood Rose, and I still had my L.A. Guns. And so because we all kind of lived together and everything, it didn't really matter who was in either band at any time. You know, it was kind of a weird thing. I never played with Hollywood Rose, though. But, you know, Izzy had been in L.A. Guns at one point. Axel was in L.A. Guns at one point. And what had happened is, like, after about a year of Axel being in L.A. Guns, our manager was just fed up with him. You know, like, hey, you know, got to get rid of that guy. But the problem was we all lived together. You know, and so, you know, I'm like, Axel, you're fired. What are we going to do now? You know what I mean? Right. And so it was a conversation that lasted about a half hour. Oh, let's just change the name of the band and we'll have a new band. And we came up with the name Guns N' Roses, and we got Izzy to play with what was the existing LA Guns at the time. And then we just changed the name to Guns N' Roses, and that was it. And I stuck with that for about a year. And then, you know, Axel kind of started getting a little wobbly, and we started fighting, which is something that had never happened, you know, up to, you know, this point where we had gotten so popular that he figured out that, you know, the stage is a great place to express your views and opinions. And,
right.
And some of his stuff I didn't agree with, you know, and I just said, you know, this is great for you guys. You know, go do it. Go conquer the world. You know, I'm going to figure out LA Guns again and go have fun again.
We're talking to I'm sorry, I mean to rob us.
No problem.
I was going to say, we're talking to Tracy Guns from LA Guns, going to be in town tomorrow at Outlaws. The Axel and the band that kind of calls itself Guns N' Roses, they were actually in town just a couple days ago. And they were here. And what do you think of that? What do you think of Axel and this current incarnation of this so-called Guns N' Roses out there right now?
Well, you know, I mean, I don't think it's true to what people... You know, you think of Guns N' Roses, you think of Slash, Top Hat, you think of, you know, a certain guitar sound, you think of a certain type of anger that comes from Axl and a certain kind of reality. I haven't heard any of their new music. I think that the show is probably fantastic, you know. You know, I mean, you can put a name on anything, but, you know, I think the proof is, you know, you go see a show and you decide for yourself, you know, do you like it, do you love it, do you like the music they're recording? Does it matter if it's called Guns N' Roses or Axl Rose? I don't think so. You know, I think in 2006, coming on 2007, that there's not a lot that's sacred anymore, you know, in any aspect of reality or life.
Well, that's true. And you know, and you were in the Brides of Destruction and just a whole bunch of bands. You explored a lot of different sounds. L.A. Guns, though, they always stayed true to that, you know, that's, again, that Sunset Strip rock, that just that great,
right.
sleazy
right.
rock. Were you ever tempted, like, you know, like Faster Pussycat or the Poison and those guys, were you tempted to, like, well, I got to put on a sleeveless flannel shirt today, you know, and be depressed? I mean, were you ever tempted in, like, 1993, or were you just like, I got to do something different, I got to be grungy?
Not really. I mean, we made you know, sometimes the music got heavier, you know, if I was in a more pissed off mood or something I was writing. But I mean, basically, you know, it's just LA Guns is a cool thing. You know, it's a revolving door of all, you know, the guys that I like in LA. You know, there's been 31 members in LA Guns. And, you know, and I think everything that's been done, even, you know, Phil and Steve did a record without me last year. It's a real true to the L.A. Guns sound.
That was going to be my question, actually. There, I mean, if you can talk about this, because there were, and maybe there are, is there two sort of competing versions of the band? Are you guys kind of fighting it out over who is L.A. Guns?
No, not really. I think, you know, I think what's happening is I'm doing it right now, and, you know, they're able to get a few shows here and there, so... There's not really any competition. There may be some confusion, which is happening, you know. But I think at this point, the kind of confusion's been flushed out a little bit because they really aren't doing that many shows. And I'm kind of wrapping up this tour and headed over to Europe. So at this level, you know, I just don't think it's that important. I think that if you go see either band, you know, you're going to hear the songs you want to hear. It's just that, you know, with my band, you're going to get your face ripped off because I'm playing guitar. That's the only difference.
Fantastic. L.A. Guns live at Outlaws tomorrow night, along with Bullet Boys and Appetite for Deception. Tickets available at all Tickets West outlets or go online to TicketsWest.com. And then you got a website, is it LAGuns.com, right?
No, it's actually Tracy-Guns.com.
Oh, okay. Tracy, and it's Tracy with two I's.
Exactly.
TRACII-GNS. Tracy-Guns.com. And then the show is at 9:30 tomorrow. Doors open at 8 p.m. All right, Tracy Guns from LA Guns. Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to talk to you, man.
Hey, right on, man. Are you guys coming down?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yes.
I'm absolutely going to be
there.
So you gotta
the more you drink, the better we sound.
Hey, and I got to tell you, just real quickly, I got to tell you, I have at home, I remember getting the Hollywood Vampire CD with the 3D cover.
Nice.
Came with the little 3D glasses, and you put on, and there you got, you know, and the Hollywood Vampires thing that was, as just growing up as like a little Wasto heavy metal kid, it was just so cool to me because the Hollywood Vampires and that whole story of the strip and the rainbow,
yeah.
I mean, it was just great. So I'm looking forward to it, and it's been a few years since I've seen you, so I'm looking forward to it, man.
Oh, good times. We'll see you there, man.
Thank you. Tracy Guns, ladies and gentlemen. LA Guns, the website is Tracy-Guns.com. There you go. Tracy Guns from LA Guns tomorrow, Outlaws. All right, take a break here. Come back, wrap it up after this. 503-733-2970. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show. After this. Emerson Radio Program. We now enter the saddest part of the broadcasting day. Final segment of the Rick Emerson Show. All right, so we want to thank Tracy Guns, we just talked to. That guy was really cool, man.
Yeah, he was.
It's, you know, here's the thing about, in my experience, guys who are, and whatever, and you know, whoever, you know, maybe you hear different things about people and, you know, maybe they're one way on the air. People are, you know, whatever. Some guys are real laid back to work with. Some guys are real uptight to work with. You know, whatever. But when it comes to stuff like that, where, you know, you talk to a guy, he does the interview, he does the whatever. The thing I've learned is the guys who are the most obnoxious are the guys who've just had, they've just had their first big hit, in my experience. Because you get a band where they have their first monster hit and then they all think they're Elvis. And then that's, they all go through this period where they're just a-holes. And it's where they get their first gold record or their first whatever, and then they're just like jerks. And then later, you know, and it's when they've been in the business for like 15, 20 years, that's, I think, they learn that they got to be cool, or else they're just never going to get anywhere. They have to be that way. So that guy was really great. I was James, who actually works in the afternoon. So I walked by and I heard you going, well, Izzy Stradlin's the whole reason for, and see, and that's the way to lure me into any conversation, is to talk about Izzy Stradlin. But you were making some observation about Guns N' Roses.
Oh, Scotty and I were talking about Guns N' Roses and how Tracy Guns was one of the founding members of Guns N' Roses. Well, he left, like he said, because Axl was a big prima donna.
Yeah.
And it's been, you know, written and said about Axl from anyone who's ever worked with him. Metallica toured with him, and that's one of their biggest complaints was he was a total prima donna. And that's why he can't hold a band together.
Well, I can't even imagine. I mean, it's funny. When I went to see Guns N' Roses on Monday, so-called Guns N' Roses, and I was talking about this last night with some musician friends of mine, and it's like, it's how sad it is that, like, Axl's introducing the band on stage. And this is the worst part, by the way, and I didn't mention this yesterday. This is the very worst part of the Guns N' Roses concert of Monday, let alone the fact that it's an arena that could have held 18 people, and it was 18,000 people, was holding four.
Maybe five.
He's got nothing to tour for. He's got no album. This Chinese Democracy has been supposed to come out for over 10 years.
Never coming out.
And there's nothing for the radio to play, so there's no interest in that band anymore.
Here's the worst part of the entire concert for me is Because, you know, moments before, and I've said this before, and I were running short on time here, but this is the Scotty saying this is good post, this is good post-game chat. Thank you. Yeah, this is the after, this is in the locker room. No, I've said, and I stand by this, that for me, the greatest moment of most concerts, because I'm a real romantic at heart about music and about rock and roll, I always have been, just a dumb idealist about this, but the greatest, most romantic moment at a concert, and I mean romantic in the big, kind of cool sense, is that instant right after the lights have gone off, but before the band has taken the stage. And you're there, because you know what? People are milling around, you're talking, you're getting a beer, you're doing whatever, the lights are on, the house. And then there's that moment when the house music fades out, and if you're in a big arena, it's like, tatoom, 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 and the lights go off one bank at a time. That's the greatest moment. It's like that moment when you buy a CD, but you haven't put it in yet. Because for that one moment, it has the potential to be the best thing you've ever heard. And then it usually isn't. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Usually not the best thing ever. So we're there Monday night. It's, of course, like midnight, midnight 15, something like that. And it's after midnight. And my friend Sneed and I are sitting there. We're like, Jesus Christ, I got to be up at like 5, you know. And the lights go boom, boom, boom off. And the crowd, you know. And then, like, despite yourself, you start getting excited, you know. And they're playing this cool intro music. It's like this Soviet march thing. And I start thinking, I'm like, maybe he'll surprise me. Like, maybe it's going to be great. You know, holding that hook, because I'm a big Guns N' Roses fan. Like, maybe Axl will, you know, maybe he'll totally, like, bring it, and this will just be fantastic. And then you hear those first notes of Welcome to the Jungle, which is what they opened with. And it's that dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. And it's like, it should be the greatest moment ever. It should be like, yeah! You know, and it was just sort of like, well, I don't know. Sounds a little different, because it doesn't sound like when Slash plays it, obviously. And you hear that dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. And I'm like, all right, you know, maybe this could be cool. Come on! Don't... And then the spotlight hits the guitars. And he's Robin Frink from Nine Inch Nails, who's playing it. The spotlight, this is the worst moment of the whole show. This is when the air went out of the balloon. The spotlight hits that guy. And what is he dressed like?
No.
Now listen to me now. I'm not saying he came out like... I'm not saying he went into Slash's wardrobe. But he came out, big-ass long ringlets of black hair, big black hat on top of his head. And, like, doing that slouch where he's looking down straight at his feet and you can't see his face.
Oh, that's awful.
Not exactly Slash. Not the stovepipe hat. But, I mean, come on. I mean, we all know what they were going... And then they spot the rhythm guitarist, who normally back in the day would be Izzy Stradlin, or Gilby Clark, who he himself dressed like Izzy Stradlin. They spot the rhythm guitarist. The rhythm guitarist has got the big poofy shirt and the snap-brim gypsy hat, which is exactly what Izzy Stradlin used to wear. You know, and it's at that moment I was just like, you know, and it really is like George Lucas at this point. I shouldn't expect anything, but it still hurts.
Do you think maybe they were contractually obligated to dress like that?
I think my friend Jay put it this way, where he said, you know, that Axl is just so insulated. Steven Tyler had this great thing about mixing a record. He said, you know, the hard part, he said, when you're in the painting, you can't see the painting. And so you don't know if it looks good or bad. And that's the thing, is Axl is just... so insulated, like, I mean, not like I know his soul or something, but I mean, from my perspective, he's like Jackson, Michael Jackson, or Elvis, so insulated and just surrounded by money and fame and yes men and his own neuroses that he can't tell when he's doing something that is just retarded. He just can't tell. I just think he looks at that and he goes, good enough, let's go. And he can't see it with the perspective that the people on the outside can. So, yeah, it's just a big... just a big buzzkill. Let's quickly take...
Postman is the person in your neighborhood.
Out to our good friend, Mailman Chris. Hello, sir.
Hey, you suck.
What? Why? Oh, because of the thing.
Yeah.
Because I got to nothing.
You got Tracy Gunn, Gleason, and Jim. The three people that absolutely had to come out.
I got to the things that were contractually required of me.
Yeah, you didn't give us any tickets. We don't know what...
Did I not give... And I even did the stupid... All right, I'll tell you what, just to make up for it. Scotty, we'll just do it the quick and easy way here. For today, we'll do the pair of tickets, we'll do it caller 5 style, and then we'll do the other one tomorrow. So we'll be good. We'll do the other one in the early part of tomorrow. So we'll do that right now. We'll do that the lame caller 5 style right now for that pair. I meant to do it at the conclusion of the interview. I'm glad you mentioned that. We will give... Let me just mention that right now. We'll do caller 5 right now for a pair of tickets to see L.A. Guns, Bullet Boys, and Appetite for Deception tomorrow at Outlaws. We'll do that right now. 503-733-733. 503-733-2970, and then we'll do that, the last pair, tomorrow in the early section of tomorrow's show. All right, thank you for reminding me of that, sir.
No problem. You also didn't get the worst story ever, 80s rock, yeah, or news that hurt.
No, it's true. And this worst story ever, I mean, let me just say this, and I got to get to it this week because it's not only from Germany, but it does contain the phrase, soiled beyond all recognition.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a bad one.
It's good times. No, it's bad. And here's the thing. And even with all of that, you couldn't possibly imagine what the story's about. And when I reveal it, it's just going to be so much worse than you could even guess. I mean, it's no good. All right, so there you go. I'm sorry. So, and I got to do
so
all
what's
these...
the total for this week, Chris?
It's at 5?
Well, you were at 0, but now you're at 9.
Are there 6 things I didn't get to today?
Yep.
All right. Fine, bastards.
Oh,
all right.
Excuse me. No, I take that back. 5.
I'm at 5, or there are 5 things I didn't get through there, so I'm at 8.
5. So you're at 8.
All right. And Scotty said Scotty is threatening to bring in a fabric tape tomorrow to address the issue of my
voice. And let's also address your height, because Nate's 6 feet, and he towers over you.
That's not true.
Rick, you and I are about the same height. I will say you are just a
what?
Taller than me.
I'm sorry?
How tall do you think he is, Chris?
I'm 5'9".
No, we're losing your call, sir. Oh, it's too... Oh, damn it. Oh... That's too bad.
So you're short and stout.
I'm sorry? I can't hear you, sir.
I'm in the room with you, Rick. You can't hang up on me.
Oh. Hello there. All right, like us next. Don and Mike at 7. John and Jeff at 11. See you all tomorrow. Thank you for coming by. We want to thank Jim Roop, Lisa Goddard, Tracy Guns. Ladies and gentlemen, Rick Emerson Show produced today and every day by the lovely, somewhat snarky Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970 Solid State Radio. Tim Riley is the newsman extraordinaire. Our PA is Scotty J. Manager. The Rick Emerson Office East is Dave Zinn. Thank you for being there. We'll see you all tomorrow, kids. Don't let the bastards grind you down. Thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye.